Welcome to Sausage on a Fork, a podcast dedicated to the UK's longest-running children's drama programme, Grange Hill. My name's Neil, and in each episode, I'll interview a former cast member about their life before, during, and after their time on the programme. Okay, welcome to the latest episode of Sausage on a Fork, and I am absolutely delighted to say that I have been joined by none other than Josh Brown, who played Alex Pickering. Josh, welcome to Sausage on a Fork.
Thank you very much. Thank you for inviting me. I appreciate the opportunity to come on.
Not at all. So what we'll do, Josh, is we'll start the way we start every episode. And if you can tell us how you first got into acting.
So I first got into acting. I was around 5 years old, and my grandma and granddad, they said that I were always up and about and dancing and you know, sort of putting on a show, as kids do. But I always went above and beyond, you know, and I loved doing it. So, you know, I grew up on a bit of a rough estate, you know, there's nothing against that. I love where I've come from. Uh-huh. I'm never turning back on it. I'm one of them people. And they wanted to give me a hobby, something that I enjoyed, something that they thought I could make something of.
Yeah.
To try not get me mixed in with the wrong group.
Uh-huh.
Basically.
Yeah.
And from the moment get-go, I went straight full in. I did ballet, tap, jazz. Nice. I did acting. I did singing classes. Anything I could do with regards to performing arts in general.
Uh-huh.
I just went full steam ahead. So I was just in it from get-go, and I absolutely loved it.
Brilliant. And so did you get to go with an agent or anything like that at that age?
So the first stage school that I were with, I owe them a lot, to be honest, because they taught, you know, as a kid, you're a sponge and you take everything in.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you learn a lot, and being around people that have got the same hobbies, same passions, everything like that. So, you know, it was one of them things that, you know, I couldn't get enough of.
Really?
And so when I first started out, I preferred dance, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
I'm a very good tap dancer. I know I can't show you on here. But tap is my absolute favourite, and I did it for 13 years. So it's been a big part of my life, and that's my main, if I were to pick one. I mean, don't get me wrong, I can pad a burry and everything, you know.
Yeah.
Ballet with my forte as well. I've got strong legs. I'm a big guy. So I've got naturally strong legs, you know. I started at Stuart Stage School in Edmondwike. And they didn't so much have a big agency.
Right.
It were more like extra work and stuff, but it were very selective extra work. And I didn't really want to be in with that.
Right.
But I enjoyed the performing outside of it. So we used to do 3 dance shows a year. We did the pantomime. So we were constantly on the go.
Yeah.
And that were me, that. But then at about 6-7 year old, that's when I really started getting into my acting.
Right.
There's one guy in particular, and I've got to thank him.
Yeah.
Because he taught me everything I know, and the guy is phenomenal. I always speak highly of him. I won't let anybody say a bad word about him. Not that anybody does. But it's Nick Teed. He was my drama teacher. He's still at Stuart Stage School now.
Wow.
After all these years. But he's brilliant. I mean, he's been published in Lambda and stuff. He writes exam pieces.
Yeah.
And just the way he sees stuff is so versatile. You know, he can make you believe you can do anything. He's one of them people.
Yeah.
And the way that he works with you is just next to none. And I know I gave him a lot of trouble when I was, you know, 12, 13 year old, and you think you know better. Trying to become class clown and stuff. So I went through all that phase, and even then it was like, Josh, you need to knuckle down this. Is your forte. So I left there at 13 and I moved to Stage 84 in Bradford.
Right.
it's a very well-known stage school around the Yorkshire area.
Uh-huh.
And at the time, Valerie Jackson, who owned Stage 84, she founded it. At the time, she was very big in the TV industry.
Right.
You know, she had Jack Shepherd, who were on her books.
Yeah, yeah.
A very good friend of mine who's been in Corrie since
forever.
I can remember. So, you know, and we had Lee Otway, Kimberly Walsh went there, right. You know, so it had a very big reputation. And at first I got put on a waiting list.
Right.
And it all started, so she wouldn't let me go on the agency at first.
Right.
And I was one of the only boys who went,
all right.
who could do ballet.
Uh-huh.
So at first she turned around and said, there's a waiting list to join, but if you want to do ballet, you can do ballet.
Right.
So I did ballet, and then I auditioned for Billy Elliot, the musical,
uh-huh.
the original cast that went into the West End.
Yeah.
And let's just say I got very, very close with that.
Oh, wow, very, really?
Yeah. To say I'm a big lad.
Yeah.
And people like to say it doesn't really matter what shape or size you are.
Yeah.
But when you've been cast for a part,
yeah,
you know, the character breakdown is pretty specific.
Yeah.
And we all watched the film Billy Elliot.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a big difference. So I auditioned for that and I got very far. And she turned around then and she was like, right, so now I know that you're serious about your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I've got an audition for Grey and Jill, so I'd like to get you on my books.
Brilliant.
So this is where it all started. This is where I blossomed. And it was something that I'd waited for. And, you know, as a kid, you're excited anyway because stuff's happening. New stuff's happening, like, oh, I've got an agent. I'm going to be on TV and all this stuff. And you get excited even though nothing's happened yet.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you literally have your headshots and you're like, yes. So, you know, and then... So she was my first agent, my proper agent. And, you know, then again, I was at that age where I was trying to be funny and stuff and always having a laugh. And she didn't like how I was, like, I was a class clown. But she loved me because I was good at what I did. And I always showed passion where it needed to be shown, you know.
Yeah, brilliant.
I was always respectful, but I didn't like to wind her up.
Yeah,
yeah. It's a given, isn't it? It's a given.
Yeah. Kids do though, isn't it?
yeah. So I got my first agent really at 14, and it was Valerie Jackson.
Right.
And she sort of gave me the opportunity to put myself on the map.
Brilliant. So I was looking at you, just some of the stuff you'd done.
Yeah.
And prior to Grange Hill, it would have been filmed around the same time, but there was an episode of Casualty.
So Casualty. I think it aired before Grange Hill.
Right, okay.
But it was filmed after.
All right, okay. Well, can I just ask, because you played a character called Darren Sullivan in that, and he suffered from a heart condition as a result of obesity. Now, I have to ask you, as a child actor, how is that put to you, like, that's what this character's going to be suffering like?
I'll be honest with you, in plain English, like, there's no... Do you know what? That's what I love. Like, within this industry, it's very cutthroat.
Right.
You know, and stuff gets said and whatnot, and, you know, and I think because of... When I go for my auditions and stuff and I meet people...
Yeah.
Because they get the nature of who I am, they're not as reluctant to say how it is.
Right, I get
you. I prefer people to be straight up. Like,
at
the time, I knew I was fat. Can I say fat?
Go ahead.
I didn't know if it was PG or what.
No, go for it.
So at the time, obviously, I know I'm fat. Right. Like, that's, you know, and it's never been something that's got me down.
I get you.
Because I was always active and I was always doing something.
Yeah.
I just thought, you know, I'm still capable.
Yeah.
I can still do what everybody else does. I'm just fat. Yeah.
Right, okay.
So, with stuff like that, when you get a character breakdown, they do seem to be a bit, you know, more PG and they'll say overweight or something like that. But because that storyline, well, like, it was so big at the time, because at the time, there was stuff going on with school dinners and fasting foods, and everybody, that's when everybody started calorie counting and, you know, stuff started showing up on food products. So at the time, to be called obese or say it's an obese person, it was just the norm.
Right, I get you.
News, so, yeah, so some people do try to go around ounces with it.
Yeah.
But I do prefer people to just be straight up and say,
All right. Fair enough. Okay. So then you've mentioned earlier on that your agent then said, right, I've got Grange Hill.
Yeah.
Or you're there. So was there much auditioning going on there for that one? Like,
right. So I'm not sure if I'm right.
Right.
But at the time that I auditioned for Grange Hill, so it was the summer 2004.
Right.
And I believe they had close to like 500-600 people audition or something.
Wow.
So there were big auditions, but at the time as well, you see, they were doing open auditions for Hollyoaks.
Right.
So the big audition scene were in at the time. So there were big numbers.
Right.
And it was one of them where I turned up to, like, I'm going to call it Mersey TV.
Yeah. Everyone calls it Mersey. Don't worry.
It's Mersey TV. No, Lime Pictures, fair dues, but my time, it was Mersey TV.
Yeah.
So it was my first, like, big audition, like, for a main part, like, you know. And I think at the time, even though I knew it was big, I didn't understand how big it actually was.
Right.
You know, like when you try and play it down in your head just to keep it cool.
Yeah.
So that was me. And, you know, I'm like a normal fat lad from an estate. So when I turned up to audition, I had a pair of shorts on. Right. I had some Levi trainers. And I think it was a Kangol top.
Right, okay.
Kangol top. And I turned up. And everybody else were like dressed up to nines.
Right.
Like proper dying to impress. And I thought, have I missed somewhere here? Like, you know, I don't get it.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I went in, we auditioned, we all sat in canteen, they pulled us in one by one. And I'm sat there with my granddad. Now my granddad was my biggest fan.
Right.
Without a doubt. He went absolutely everywhere with me. It didn't matter what time we went, no, nothing.
Yeah.
We were there. He drove. He took me absolutely everywhere. God bless him. And we sat there and he just went, you know, like, just go do it. So I went in, I auditioned and I come out and he said, right, you can go now, as you do with an audition process. And then a couple of days later, I got a phone call. You've got through. So I thought, right, sound. So, you know, got a bit more excited. Started realizing what was going on. And I went to my second audition. So my second audition was more of a group.
Right.
Group audition. So obviously there were Alex, Ed, Tigger. They were the three.
Yeah.
We were best mates. I didn't actually audition with Jack or Alex.
Oh, right, okay.
Now, we were all in the same audition room.
Yeah.
But we never auditioned together, so to speak.
Yeah.
But what's good, I mean, I know I'm going a bit off subject, but what's good about, what was good about auditioning at Mersey TV, so Dorothy Andrews, she was the casting director at the time.
Yeah.
Very well spoken, didn't understand me most of the time. Just ring up the office and I'd answer the phone and I'd be like, hello. She'd be like, oh, Josh, it's you. Will you put somebody else on? So she used to have, where you sat in your waiting to go on audition, it was just glass panels.
Right.
So everybody in the office were watching everything you did.
Right.
You know, and I think that played with a lot because although I didn't audition with Jack and Alex, I mean, Jack had already been given the part.
Right.
He moved over from Brookside.
Yeah.
So, and then there were me and Alex. So the way we were talking in that room beforehand, I think, give them a bit of a clue as to what was going on.
Yeah.
So then that was my second audition. And then a few days after that, I think it might have been a week after that, we got a phone call saying, we've got through again. Can we please come back? So this time I turned up and it was just me, and there was Georgia Foote, who obviously played Alison, and Sasha Parkinson, who went to come on in. I think she came in 2 years later, did Sasha?
Right, yeah.
You know, she'd been with Connie as well, same as Georgia. So my audition was with them too. So I did an audition with them each.
Yeah.
And then I got brought in by myself. And Carl, the producer at the time, turned around and said, which girl did you think you have the better chemistry with?
Right.
So I picked Georgia. I didn't know that I would get angry with
It's okay.
I didn't know, you know. First time I'd done all that, so.
Yeah.
And then obviously Georgia ended up being Alison. I walked out of that audition in a way that I've never walked out of an audition before that.
Nice.
Like, I walked out and I thought to myself, I've given my all. I've done the best I can.
Yeah.
But I believe it's enough. You know, just from the body language and the way they were talking and stuff. And then later on that day, I actually went from there to Stage 84. I was doing a drama class.
Right.
And Valerie just pulled me to one side and she went, can I talk to you outside a minute, please? And I said, yeah. So I went outside. We sat on a bench outside, just outside the door. And she went, I just wanted to tell you in person that you've got the part on Green Jill.
Yes.
You can't, I can't explain that feeling, you know. I want to say it's like the adult version, the adult equivalent of I've made it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Obviously, I it's not like me not having nothing to say.
Yeah.
I've always got something to say. But I just sat there for a few minutes and she was like, are you all right? I said, yes. And you just, how do you take that? You're going to be on TV. It's a big kids TV program. Like, I'm going to be all over the country.
Yeah.
You know?
Were you a fan of Green Jill?
Do you know what? I'd watched a couple of episodes and obviously you got your big storylines and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And they always, there were always good publicity about Green Jill because it always hit hard about stuff that were relevant at the time.
Yeah,
but I'd say they did it in a more PG way to appeal to the younger audience.
Yeah.
You know, in a sort of way that they're telling you about what's going to happen through high school life or what can happen in life in general.
Yeah.
But in a more subtle way,
yeah.
You know, and trying to show that even though stuff goes on, you can, you know, it would. I think they were setting out really good messages with storylines.
Yeah, definitely. So we'll look at a few of your storylines. So you joined in Series 28, which was on air in 2005. Yeah. And the first time we see Alex, he's with his best mate, Ed, who you've mentioned there, Alex Sheldon. Was that ever confusing, by the way? The fact that you were playing a character called Alex and his real name was Alex. Was there ever any confusion on that one?
The one at first, obviously, because when you're on set, you know, we used to have quite a few people in for work experience or they're doing work placement and stuff, you know, runners, third ADs, stuff like that. So, sometimes, but it wasn't necessarily them that got confused, but because they were confused and would just shout Alex or, and we'd be like, which one do you know what I mean? So, sometimes it did, but I'd say probably halfway into his first series, he sort of settled, we sort of got, you know,
okay.
You know what we're what, we knew what we're what.
Okay, fair enough. So, as I say, the first time we see, he's with Ed, and this gets me. He brought in a remote-controlled blimp, if you remember that one.
Yeah, and I do, yeah.
It just seems daft. I mean, I suppose nowadays it would be a drone, wouldn't it, that he would bring in.
Yeah,
like, but at the time, because he mentioned about the fact that he's got every single device going, he's massively into his technology and stuff like that. So we had this... remote control. He had this remote control blimp and he's messing about with it. Tigger wanted to have a go because obviously I think Ed and Alex were mates from primary school. They didn't know Tigger and Tigger was just around. He wouldn't let Tigger have a go. And then Chloe ran over and grabs the remote and takes it off him and starts having a go, which is a sign of things to come as to how Chloe treats Alex.
I think in that scene or that episode, I think I even got called a fat blimp.
Quite possibly, yeah. And as Chloe's messing about with the blimp, she crashes it into Mr. Malachi and then gives Alex the blimp, and she gives the remote back, and they run off. And the lads don't want to get in trouble, so they leave the blimp as well and run away. And then Chloe and Andrea were making fun of Alex's size, as you've just mentioned there. And Alex was like, "I've heard it all before, you know what I mean? I'm not bothered," and all that. And Tigger is apologising to Alex for losing the blimp.
Yeah.
And he said, "Tells me get it back." And then the friendship sort of started forming there. And then Tigger sat with Alex for dinner and couldn't believe how much food Alex had had. And when I was watching this, you watch it as an adult, and it's different to when you watch it as a kid, because Alex was saying about his mum give him that much food. He didn't really want it, but his mum gave him it. And you start thinking, well, is there going to be some sort of, like, you know, abuse from the parent? You know, like a form of child abuse there with the parent. Yeah. But that sort of seemed to disappear, that bit. Yeah, like, he mentioned a couple of times. But he also says that he's a slow metabolism. He said, "I don't know what that means. I don't know what that means, but it's something that my mum says." And you think, yeah. And in the end, Tigger gets the blimp back for him by telling Wally Scott, the caretaker, played by Simon O'Brien.
What a guy.
That the locker that it was in, because it was in Togger's locker at this point. Togger had got the blimp back, but he ends up getting it back for him. And Tigger then sticks up for Alex, along with Ed, when the girls are having another go. Now, I have to say, Chloe Moore was a horrible character.
Oh, yeah.
But what an actress Mia Smith. The role that she just played it so well, didn't she?
Do you know what? Bless her. She, absolute top girl. And at the time, she was so young, but she was so much older in her head.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And she was so like that character in so many ways.
Right.
But without, she weren't nasty. Do you know what I mean? She wouldn't have done that in real life.
Yeah.
But she played it so well. The attitude, absolutely everything, like, that was Mia.
She does. She makes you hate that character. She properly makes you hate that character. Like, she did it so well. And Alex got the blimp back, and he was undeterred about what had happened with it. The next time we see him, he's bringing in a radio-controlled car.
Oh, yeah. Love the remote-controlled car.
And he accidentally drives it into Alison, who you just mentioned there, played by Georgia Fortin. Alex apologised, but then Alison apologised as well. And the friendship starts forming again. And I love that friendship between Alex and Alison, because it sort of harks back a little bit to, like, Grangeville from, like, the 80s when Roland was in it, Roland and Janet, where, although Alison probably wasn't as domineering as Janet tried to be with Roland. And but they're talking, and when Alison walks away, the girls then come over and take the car. They take the car. So that's Chloe, Andrea, and Sammy. And it never sat right with me that Sammy was their mate, to be honest. Obviously, she was terrified, but it never sat right with me that she was their mate. And Alex doesn't tell the lads that the girls have taken him, because obviously Alex never liked telling on anyone, did he? He had loads of reasons for that, didn't he?
Yeah. And I think it's one of them that, you know, who at that age wants to turn around and said they're being bullied, and even more so bullied by girls.
Yeah.
And I'm not one of them where males are superior and stuff and whatnot. But, you know, it's to get bullied by a girl at that time when you're in school, like, you know.
Alex is so much taller. So much taller than Chloe
the height,
as well.
The height, and you just think, you know, you'd think he'd do something about it, but it's one of them where he was so in himself, but he was trying to impress so many people. It's one of them where, if he'd turned around and said something, it'd have been 10 times worse than what it was.
Definitely. Because the lads realised that the girls took the car. They worked that out. So Sig is determined to get it back from Chloe. They end up getting into Chloe's locker, and they also get a load of sweets that the girls had tried to sell. And for that, the girls told Mr. Malachi that Tigger was bullying Alex.
Yeah.
When he actually wasn't. And Mr. Malachi opened Tigger's locker and saw all the sweets, told him to stay away from Alex, but then gave Alex all the sweets as well. Alex is trying to tell Mr. Malachi that they're not his, but he just didn't believe him. And then the girls jumped him and took all the sweets back. Yeah. And there was all sorts of things where Mr. Malachi was having a health drive and was asking people to swap fruit for sweets instead.
Yeah.
And Alex wants to get on board with that. Alex was happy to get involved. And then Togger managed to get hold of a load of the sweets, gave them to Tigger. And Alex was like getting picked on, and it was starting to get to him. And it was the first time Granger had done this. They did like a proper like comfort eating storyline, and Alex was sort of way out of it, because Alex took the bag of sweets and ate them all.
Yeah, yeah. I think I actually did as well, I'm not gonna lie.
Right, okay. So on that then, so the girls were picking on Alex. The lads were teasing him about fancying Alison. And then Mui starts picking on Alex,
Johnny,
as well.
Johnny.
And was like, come and see me every break time. And Alex is becoming increasingly isolated.
Yeah, very, very isolated.
And do you know what? I've thought about this a lot, and I've seen quite a few bullying storylines on Granger Hill. This is probably the most well-written and the darkest one, I think. The darkest storyline out of all of them.
It was very, very, very well-written.
Yeah.
Obviously, I got sat down at the beginning before... So we all went for a read-through of the first two episodes. And in that meeting, let's say... I sat down with the producers, Phil Redmond himself, and a couple of people from the office. Not the programme.
No, Ricky Gervais turning up.
And they sat me down, and they basically laid out a floor plan of where they were going with this storyline.
Yeah.
And to be fair, like, I've always been a big lad. In school, I never really experienced bullying.
Right.
I've always been a popular guy, and I hate bullies. Hated them through school. Like, that's not... But I've always been very popular, so for me, it were a big jump from my normal school life.
Yeah.
And, you know, they gave me all this research, and I always had people that I could ask stuff. And, you know, we actually... visited a few schools doing an anti-bullying campaign.
Right.
And I spoke to and I met with people who'd been bullied in school and got to that point.
Yeah.
And it was something at the time that you didn't really ever hear anything about. Mm-hmm. You know, it would always sort of brush under the table. Bullying's always been rife, but it wasn't really talked about.
Yeah.
And it wasn't really looked at like it is now. But, and I were meeting people who'd actually been in that position. And to meet people like that who were the same age as me.
Yeah.
And I'm doing so well. And, you know, they've had a completely different life to what I've had. And it sort of brought me back down to reality.
Yeah.
And I think from there were where it wasn't necessarily method acting, but... when you're trying to put yourself in somebody else's shoes.
Yeah.
And I think that the way they wrote the script, like, totally portrays everything that I got told and from people's experiences and stuff. Like you say yourself, the isolation.
Yeah.
all these little things just adding up, and it all just getting too much, you know.
Yeah.
And like, not just that, but the period of time it takes,
yeah,
you know, to fully be somebody down like that.
Yeah.
And I mean, full credit to the writers. Some of the stuff, I mean, I don't know if you're going to talk about it later on, but I do have to mention it now. So there was my suicide note.
Yeah.
I'm sorry if I've jumped gun.
But no, you're all right. Go ahead.
Because we're talking about the script, I feel like I need to mention it. There was a scene where I wrote my suicide note. I actually filmed it.
Yeah.
On an handheld camera.
Yeah.
And it was like 3 pages long.
Right.
Like 3 pages long. And at first I thought, that's a big scene, that.
Yeah. You know,
it were a bit daunting. Obviously, it's a big thing. And the momentum and the feeling that had to be put across in the scene, like, really had to hit home. I had to nail it. I had to nail it. Silver option. And when I read it, I was like, wow. That, like, you know.
Yeah.
I know it's not real, but it just... You had that proper, like, dumped feeling where you just, and you think, wow, you know, and obviously I'm there, imagine it in my head.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. And so it was pretty daunting at first, but they wrote it that well.
Yeah.
And I put, like, that much into it because I wanted to nail it, that when I did it, it just flowed. And I know that it should be like that anyway.
Yeah.
But, 14-year-old, something that big, you know, and I absolutely loved them for it. I had because the script work, like you said, it was brilliant, and it was deep, it was relevant, you know,
definitely, because there's so much going on with Alex there. Because there was a bit I wanted to talk about, and it's when it's Alex's birthday, and Ed was sort of Ed had been moving away a bit from Alex as well. Ed was saying that, like, he didn't like getting laughed at when, you know, when he was with Alex, and that what was happening as well. And but Ed had forgotten his birthday, and Alex had brought a cake in, and he ended up eating it all himself and sitting under the stairs and crying and all that while he's eating it. Was that one difficult to film?
Yeah, it was. I mean, don't get me wrong, I didn't eat all the cake.
Right, okay.
Not in real life, but yeah. It was, because, you know, it's one of them, like you say, Alex and Ed come up from primary school.
Yeah.
They were best mates. Now, you know your best mates' birthdays and stuff, you know? And I think that them two, as like a pair, were fully like, we're going to tackle high school together.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of like you make a pact, don't you? Yeah. And, you know, you don't want to lose your mates. Even though now you look back and you think, it happens.
Yeah.
You do lose mates, you make new
definitely.
Mates. But you want to keep on to the ones that you've got at the time, because, you know, you're getting on so well and you've got that connection, that bond. So it was difficult because I'd never had a birthday like that.
Right.
And I'm not saying that I always had mates around me for my birthdays and stuff and whatnot. But when you've got something like that, where you're bringing in a cake and stuff like that, you're expecting to give that cake out to your friends.
Yeah.
So there's a bit of an expectancy with it. You're taking it into school to give out so you can share with your friends, and they can all celebrate your birthday. And the fact that, you know, nobody remembered.
Yeah.
That's got to be hard.
Yeah.
You've got all that other stuff that's happening before that's playing on your mind.
Mm-hmm.
It's just adding to the list. And then you're that low and that down that you sat eating it underneath some stairs.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's equivalent to eating it in a toilet cubicle on your own.
Yeah.
You know, it's very isolated.
Definitely.
And it was hard because you put yourself in that person's shoes.
Yeah, definitely.
It's one of them where you know, before you go filming and stuff and you walk into set and stuff, you'll be having a laugh, you'll be talking, you'll be chit-chatting.
Yeah.
You know, and you get a good vibe off it and you think, yeah, we're going to go do this scene now.
Yeah.
We're going to smash it. We're going to do proper well. But with scenes like that, you tend not to.
Right.
Like, you do tend to, like, pretty isolate yourself.
Yeah.
And to get yourself in the mood because you know it's coming up. But then after that, that mood's still there.
Yeah.
And it lingers for a bit, you know. So you sort of do live it yourself, even though you know it's fake and you know it's been wrote, it's not happening naturally.
Yeah.
You're still dealing with that feeling, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And you know, Alex's time just got worse and worse. You know, there was the adventure trip away that Ed and Alison had convinced Alex to go on that, and he was really looking forward to it. And the girls found out that Alison was suffering from eczema.
Yeah.
And there's a scene where the girls again start having a go at Alex. They start having a go at Alison. They call them freaks. And
yeah,
Alex just goes, "I'm not a freak," but he doesn't really stick up for Alison. And it wasn't like he meant to be. It meant to be that way, but obviously that hurt Alison. And when Alex tried to apologise, she didn't want to know. And then it just kept getting worse and worse. Spencer was appointed Alex's mentor, but he didn't really want to know Alex either, because he was making the film. So we said to Alex, there's the video camera. Go and film me something happening in the school so we can do that.
Yeah.
And Alex just basically, as you said there, started making a video diary of everything that goes on. And you've mentioned about the suicide notes. And Spencer wants to get his film finished, and he gets the disc that Alex has given.
Yeah.
And he's watching it, and he's just going on about Alex was moaning, just moaning. He's just a whinger. He's this. And he starts watching it, and there's the bit where Alex says the only time he was able to shut out everything going on was when he was underwater. He couldn't stop thinking about it and how peaceful it was. And Spencer's watching this, and he grabs the disc, and the disc says on it, it's labelled for Mum and Dad.
Yeah.
And Spencer then realises what's going on. Now, Alex has put a load of books in a bag, put them on his back, gone to the swimming pool, and thrown himself in the pool.
Yeah.
I have to ask you about that. What was that like to film as well?
So, the whole suicide thing, obviously, I had massive support from everyone. Everybody were just showing the support and everything like that. And I think in a way that was for me to not get too carried away with what was being filmed. Because you can, I mean, I've done it before, and you really dive into the character to the point where you start doing their traits. You know what I mean? So that character's sort of, like, you start picking up what that character's about, and it becomes you, so to speak. And I think because at the time, people of that age, vulnerable and stuff, and so the support I got was brilliant. But it was hard to film because at the time, like, 14-year-olds, like, I mean, I'm from, you know, an area where, you know, like, I grew up, you know, we're born in a rough estate and stuff, you know. And you don't really hear about suicide notes.
Right.
You know, like suicide, like, weren't really something that's spoke about like it is today. So it was difficult because all these little clips, like you say, were doing a vlog.
Yeah.
Sort of doing a vlog of school life.
Yeah.
And each one were more depressing and more depressing and more depressing. To the point where, you know, I did a final goodbye and just said what I needed to say. It was difficult because, as I say, when you're filming, and obviously you're filming blocks.
Yeah.
So we were filming in two episode blocks, so we were filming two episodes at a time.
Uh-huh.
So at the time, I think it was episode 16, I think, I tried to commit suicide. So we're doing 15 and 16 at the same time. So in episode 15, you've got the build-up, and in episode 16, you've got the actual suicide attempt. And because you're up and down, because you're doing the build-up, and then you're doing that, and then you're doing this, and because you were a mix of the two programs, you were so up and down, up and down. And it does take its toll because it's long days.
Yeah.
There's a lot of script work. But the storyline in itself, like I say, you're into that character so much, like, played him day in, day out for 8 months, a year.
Yeah.
So it was hard, and it did take its toll. It was more the thought of people have the realization that people have actually tried to do this.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That's what really hit home.
Yeah.
And, you know, we saw people as young as 11 year old.
Yeah, sure.
Who tried to do this. And I think, you aren't, I know life's not been good.
Yeah.
But you're always, as a kid, you're always, I want to be older because I want to do this. You've got stuff that you want to do. And I just thought, when the bad outweighs the rest of your life that you could plan out.
Yeah.
You know, it's a big weight to carry.
Definitely.
It's a big weight to carry. I wanted to do it in a way that people saw it, people learn, but the people that were actually going through it could relate to it and it resonated with them.
Yeah.
To the point of showing them that there is, you know, and you can get help. Yes. And that's, and I wanted to do it that well that people thought, you know what? He's bang on with me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I wanted to pull it off to its fullest potential. Very difficult.
Yeah, I mean, it was so well done. And then, of course, when Spencer realised what's happened, he runs to the pool, he grabs Baz on the way, and they end up getting him out the pool.
Yeah.
Baz takes the lead on the CPR, and they were able to get Alex breathing again. And again, you know, that sequence having to film a CPR scene, I mean, you know, it was, I guess that must have been difficult as well.
Do you know what? So when we actually come to film the scene where I jumped in and stuff, obviously I'd done the build up, putting the books in the bag and whatnot.
Yeah.
Now this pool, same pool as what they use for Jim and Hollyoaks. So it wasn't deep; it was 4 foot all the way along. So it was only 4 foot deep.
Yeah.
I had people in there with sticks, you know, because obviously I'm going face first, like front on. And they wanted me to sink to the bottom and stay there for a couple of seconds. So I had people teaching me breathing techniques, and I had people in the pool with me with sticks, just in case I couldn't stand up and I needed to get myself up. So I had four different sets of uniform.
Right, okay.
So I needed to do it in four takes.
Right.
So we started off at first, and, you know, I just had the back on my bag. I mean, the bag on my back. I jumped in, didn't sink at all.
Right.
did not sink at all. The second take that we did, I sank a little bit, but I had actual weights in my bag.
Right.
The third attempt we did, I had weights in my shoes, my pockets, my socks, my blazer pockets, in the bag. I must have weighed an extra at the time. It felt about 5 stone. So I've jumped in the third time and I've sank a little bit, but I've come straight back up to the top. Gaynor, who was the wardrobe mistress at the time, she turned around and she went, "Josh, I'm going to have to take your lining out of your blazer."
Right.
So she took the lining out of my blazer, last dry uniform that we had, and I had weights absolutely everywhere now.
Right.
Like, my top shirt pocket, I had weights strapped to me around my waist, everything. It was a bit of a shock because I wasn't expecting it. Like, I thought I was going to sink.
Yeah.
But I knew the aim was to sink, but not like that.
Right.
So I've jumped in and I've actually sunk.
Right.
And in my head, I panicked a little bit, but then I thought, no, just go with it, go with it. Practice my breathing techniques. And I was actually underwater. I stayed there until they got me to stand up because I thought, I can't just open my eyes in case.
Yeah.
So I actually underwater for like close to like 25, maybe 30 seconds.
Right.
So it did work out, but it was hard to film, like you say, with the CPR and stuff. And obviously they're pulling the body up out of the water. So, I mean, what I've said before, I'm a big guy. So them two trying to get me out of the water when I'm fully clothed and I'm absolutely wet through. You know, it's difficult in itself.
Yeah.
We tried, because I was already wet, we tried a couple of times, and first few takes I had to try and help him.
Right. You know, like,
bring myself onto the swimming pool floor, like, so to speak. So, but and I think that's where, when we did that scene, obviously there were Colin and Tom, and there was Lauren and Kirsten, and Ed. Ed, who plays Mr. Malachi, they ran in and they observed what had gone on and stuff. And I think at that point, it hit home for them as well.
Right, yeah.
You know, the realisation of what the storyline, obviously they knew what the storyline was about, but there's a difference between reading it and actually being in a scene where you're trying to bring somebody back to life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think that's where that hit home for them.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously, you know, we've said they were able to get him breathing again, and he went to the hospital and all that, and then he eventually came back to school, and everyone was feeling guilty about what had happened, except for Chloe, obviously. who didn't think she'd done anything wrong. You know, Alex went back to school. He found out that Mary Humphries and his mates had been excluded because he'd only named them as the bullies.
Yeah. You know what's ironic is me and Johnny went to the same stage school. So
right. Wow.
We were actually very good mates at the time as well.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Brilliant. But then the girls were found out and they still didn't think. Oh, Chloe still was like, I don't know what I've done wrong. And the girls, Sammy and Andrea, eventually gave a really sort of heartfelt apology to Alex, and Chloe just went soz and like walked on as though that was it. And then towards the end, it was all about, you know, going towards the end of that series about going to prom, and Alison said she'd go with Alex, and then Jeremy asked them if they wanted to go in the limo, and when they got out the limo, Alison dropped their bag. Alex bent over to pick up the bag for her, ripped his kecks, and ran off like, you know, it always happens to me. And that was when Alison sort of said, well, so what? Come on. And she gets it. She takes her cardi off, showing her eczema scars and all that.
Yeah.
And, you know, they eventually went to the prom, and it was the premiere, wasn't it? The movie premiere, that was it, not the prom.
Movie premiere, yeah.
And then, you know, they were all mates again, and it all moved on. And then the next series, 29.
Yeah.
For some reason, Alex had this thing of making fart noises. All the time. Whose idea was that? Surely that wasn't your idea.
No, it wasn't my idea, no.
Right.
It's not something I normally do either.
Okay. And I guess in this series, because your storyline had been so massive in the one before, it was sort of like Alex had a little bit of a backseat.
Yeah.
In this one. And it wasn't really anything sort of major. It was all about Alex and Alison and their friendship. And how every now and again, Alex would do something stupid to upset Alison. Like with her eczema when Mui was coming over and just trying to like intimidate him a little bit. And he grabbed Alison's arm and sort of rubs his skin on and going, having, you know, I've cornflakes for breakfast. And you just think, mate, what are you playing at? Yeah, you know what I mean? Like,
this
girl's, it's like she's sticking up for you all the time. And you go and do stupid things like that because he said, well, you did it to someone. And she's like, yeah, but it's my skin. You know, I'm allowed to do that. And he talks to Togger about it. It probably wasn't the best idea, you know, to go and talk to Togger about it. Like,
definitely not.
You know, relationships come and go, and that's just the way it is, which wasn't the advice Alex was expecting, but it was Togger that he'd gone to, and Togger was having his own issues, wasn't he? Going on, and they did apologize. He did apologize to Alison, but then Mui came back with his mates, going, "Yeah, look at this girl over here," and Mui kept hitting Alex and telling him to do it, and Alex wouldn't. He wouldn't do it, and Alison said, "Well, you probably should have done that," and Alex said, "But you're my friend, and I don't care what he thinks of me," showing that, you know, Alison's positive influence, you know, her outlook had that sort of positive.
Gives him a bit of a backbone.
Yeah, definitely. Backbone. And then Mrs. Bazinger was running an enterprise scheme. And this is the first enterprise scheme that they got involved in. And at this point, they'd had more radio-controlled cars taken off them. So Tigger was like, well, we need this back for our enterprise scheme.
Yeah.
And he needs to get them back, and Miss Bazinger wouldn't let them have them. But then Alison's like, well, we need them back. And she used prohibition because he'd been learning about that as an example. And they ended up getting
loads of people involved, and they end up having good races on it and stuff. And Chloe was running a book on it, on the races, and she stood to lose a bit of money if Alex won. So she walked onto the track to stop Alex again. Obviously, she still didn't, you know, she still had it in for Alex, didn't she? Even after everything that had gone on. And Mui was starting to get a bit more prominent with Alex. He wasn't taking the back seat like he was supposed to. And Mui was doing well in the radio console car race as well.
Yeah, he was.
And Mui was still having a go and you know, threatening him, saying like, don't win the race and all that because I want the money that. And Alex had started comfort eating again, because Alex had sort of said earlier on that he wanted to lose weight, and Tigger was like, well, how are you going to lose weight, you know, if you keep eating? And he said, well, my mum said everyone deserves a treat, and he's there eating like a full massive bar of Galaxy or something like that, you know what I mean?
That happened quite a bit, didn't that?
And the lads decide to make smoothies, which, you know, carries on again in another series. But Mui saw them making the smoothies. This was for the exchange party, the Indonesian exchange party. Mui came in and switched the blender on, and it ruined Tigger's brand new jacket that he got for his birthday. And Tigger obviously had a go at Alex, and then he went for Mui as well.
I remember filming that scene.
Yeah. Everyone was rotten in that one, weren't they? And then it carries on, and Alex and Tigger are making the smoothies again, and then the sink gets blocked.
Yeah.
On that one, Tigger went to get help, came in, and turned all the blenders on, and told Alex not to forget about losing the car race. And again, that's, you know, we talked about that. And then he tried to grab the money, Alex's cash box, but he slipped on the floor and got away. And while he was there, he starts drinking all the... He starts drinking the smoothies and ends up throwing up. And you see him later on with Alex, blaming Alex for him being sick and, like, ruining Alex's own work and all that. And Alex had said to him, like, you know, you're not supposed to be doing this to me. You're supposed to have stopped. And he basically says to him, well, I'm never going to stop.
Yeah.
And you just think, oh, my God, how's this going on? You know what I mean? How's this happening? And like I say, Mui had been threatening him not to win the race. Mui wanted to win the money in the race, because it was a fair bit that they were going to win. And they were also hoping that they were going to win the enterprise scheme.
Very much so.
And Tigger had been offered the chance to go to Euro Disney with Ed. I don't know if you remember this bit, but he couldn't afford it. He had to pay for it himself. No. And Alex said, well, I'll pay for you. I'll pay for you to go when I win the race. And Mui kept threatening Alex. Alex was winning the race. Mui kept threatening him.
Yeah.
But Alex didn't care, and Alex won. And Mui said it was a big, big mistake. Because later on, Mui came up to Alex and congratulated him and said, you know, well done. You're the real winner. You're the true winner. And walked off. And then Alex realizes later on that Mui had actually pickpocketed him.
Yeah.
And took the key and realised that he'd been in the locker and took his money, and he couldn't tell Tigger, because he told him that he could have the money. And Mui told Alex that the money had run out and he wanted more.
So he's back
bullying him again, and you just think, why's the lad? Why won't he just leave him alone? Taylor Mitchell told Mui to leave him alone, and it just went on and on, and Alex is panicking how he's going to tell Tigger. He doesn't want to tell Tigger that people are picking on him again. And Miss Passenger dropped the envelope with the first prize in. I don't know if you remember that.
She drops the envelope,
which has got first prize written on it. And Alex sort of has like this crisis of conscience then, thinking, I've told this lad I'm going to pay for his holiday, but I can't because the money's gone, and I can't tell him that I'm getting picked on. So he picks up the envelope and runs off, because the first prize in the competition, they've been told, was 500 quid.
Yeah.
So they're told that. But when he gets the envelope, it's just like a gift certificate. It's just a certificate that says £500.
I remember.
Yeah. And Sammy had saw him take it. So Sammy and Alison came and asked him,
yeah,
what's going on? And they worked out that Mui had taken the money, but they didn't, they said it was too late now, they couldn't do anything about it.
Yeah.
And it just sort of ends with Tigger throwing a water balloon at Mui. A bit of a fight starts with Tigger's mates and Mui's mates, and Togger had joined in as well, but then Miss Bassinger came in. Just when we were open, Mui was going to get a shoo-in.
Yeah.
Mr. Malachi and Miss Bassinger arrived, and that was how the series ended. And like I say, you had a sort of a bit of a backseat on that one in that series. Yeah. But then series 30, it all sort of starts up again. Because Alex is thinking making the smoothies at home rather than make them in school.
Yeah, so they're not going to be tarnished.
And then Max and Mui told him that they'd be after money from Nate. Now, James Wignall, who played Max.
What a guy he is, James. Honestly, what a character.
But you not think he looks about 20 years older than everyone else in the program? He just looks so much older. Obviously, he was a sixth former anyway.
Yeah.
But when you watch him and you just think, he just looks so much older than everyone else. So already he's intimidating there because he just looked so much older.
Yeah.
And now the pair of them are having a go as well.
They're like Phil and Grant Mitchell.
Yeah.
Like the Phil and Grant Mitchell and Graham Gill. Honestly, they were as thick as thieves.
But again, you know, it starts off, and again, they're saying they want their 5% and all that. Alex had been given dispensation from the school as long as he gave them, I think it was 25%.
I think so, something like that. Yeah.
And Tigger and Ed were helping him out, but now they wanted paying for helping him, and he agreed because he didn't want to get left on his own. Because every time he was on his own, one or both of the Humphreys brothers came turned up. And there's a scene later on where Max is after money, but from Mui. And he says to him, you know, like, I want a tenner off you by the end of the day. And it's that classic example there of the bully being bullied. And that's the first time we see it there. And he still wouldn't tell anyone. He couldn't tell his mates what was happening with Mui and Max. And he ends up arguing with Tigger and Ed. And because after telling them that he couldn't pay them, and they basically said, you know, well, fine, we're not going to do anything.
Yeah.
And there was a dance class going on. Don't know if you remember that. There was a dance class for like a salsa dance class. And Alex starts selling the smoothies there to try and make the money that Mui wanted. So he gives the money, he gets the money, and he gave it to Mui. But Mui punches him in the stomach. Don't know if you remember that one.
I remember getting punched in the stomach.
And he says to him, well done, I'm pleased here. Imagine if I wasn't. And you just think, oh.
Yeah, and then gives me a dig. Yeah,
they're never going to leave these
like
lads alone.
Like a warning shot, like, you know.
Yeah.
Come if you don't keep up to it, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, Alex is saying now he couldn't afford to buy decent fruit anymore, and they should pack in selling the smoothies. But Mui says, well, go and collect the cash from the people who owed him, because Mui had let Alex get people to pay him credit. But no one would pay Alex. And as soon as he mentioned Mui's name, people started paying up. So, and if you remember, it was around this time that Baz had died.
Yeah.
And wanted to go and pay his respects, because obviously Baz had looked after Alex, and he'd helped him when he tried to kill himself and stuff.
Yeah.
And Mui just wouldn't let him. He wouldn't let him, you know. It was horrible. And Alex had tried to tell Mr. McDonald what was going on with Mui, but he just ended up telling him that his dad was pressurizing him to make more money to pay for the smoothie maker that his dad had bought, like a startup cost.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is that classic example. I mean, I was picked on at school. I was never bullied in a traditional sense of the word, but I was picked on, and I did have me moments where I just thought, well, how's this going to stop? I mean, I was lucky in the fact that it did just stop. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It did just stop as we started getting older. And Mr. McDonald was starting to get convinced that Mui was bullying Alex, but he couldn't prove it. So then, so Alex gets a note from Miss Basinger saying she needs to speak to him. But the note actually come from Mui, and it just said Baz isn't here to save you now. And you know when you just think that's just bullying. Another level.
For the time as well for the time it actually aired. Like it's pretty advanced in what.
Yeah, it's just another level because as you say, you know, we've said it so many times on here. For stuff like that to be going on in a kids' TV program,
it's
horrible, isn't it? And
but that's the life that were relevant at the time, like and it's a show of power. Like I can grab you whenever you want, I can get in touch with you whenever I want.
Definitely. I mean, Alex, you know, he stops doing his own work because he's trying to make the money and all that because he's been given dispensation from the school, and he's starting to think. Well, if I don't do my own work, the school are going to say I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
So he tells Miss Gale, by the way, Kathy Tyson,
honestly,
when you got to work with her, did you know how big she actually was?
You know what? Not just in Graham Jill, I've worked with people throughout the years, and no disrespect to any of them, but I see people for who they are. And it's one of them where you don't at the time, and because we were young, we didn't really, not that we didn't, we just didn't really pay attention to that sort of stuff. We were having so much fun filming and living life. But you don't realise how big some people are that come in to work with us.
Yeah.
You know, we had some great guest appearances in Granger, and some great characters.
Yeah.
Especially when I were there. We had some absolute brilliant people come in.
Yeah. What's her name? Kim Hartman. Was she there? Yeah, Kim Hartman, you know, done Hello Hello and stuff like that. So massive. He told Miss Gale and she just said, right, well, we'll sort something out. And he really wants to pack in and you can have time to do your own work and all that. And it's just getting worse and worse for him. And in the end, Max says to him, you know, on the day of Baz's funeral, you know, it's been an emotional day and we don't have to do the smoothies anymore. Because they cornered Alex and Alex smashed the smoothie maker. And they basically said to him, we'll pack that in now. Because Alex had been on the radio station, if you remember, and said, you know, I used to enjoy making smoothies and I thought it'd be something I could do when I left school, and you just see how it's got to him, and he's losing that again. Yeah, but they said he's packing the smoothie business, but he still wants the money, and that then led Alex to then start bullying the year sevens, which was a side we'd never seen before of Alex. But we talked about it earlier that, you know, the bullied becoming a bully, basically.
Yeah, it happens every day.
Yeah.
It happens every day. He's
definitely
getting their power back, you know.
Yeah, and Max and Mui then decided that they were going to hold a raffle, but they wanted decent prizes, and Alex couldn't get any, so he then starts picking on Bryn. He starts bullying Bryn to get prizes, and the prizes were no good. And it got to a point where the lads were always flushing Alex's head down the toilet. And at one point, they even get him to do it himself.
Yeah.
You know, and... It's horrible, and pushing his head into a urinal and stuff like that. And obviously you can see why Alex ends up doing it to Bryn, because he wants out of it. He wants this to stop. And the only way he can get it to stop is because he can't tell anyone. He can't tell people. He said he couldn't tell people he was getting bullied again. And then I have to say then, although it's part of the bullying storyline, one of the funniest things that ever happened was when the lads told Alex that they had to get a fridge freezer for their raffle.
Yeah.
And he ends up getting it. He gets Bryn to help him, but he has to swap his handheld game, which is horrible in itself to do it. But then the bits, the shenanigans of getting it back to school. Because it ends up, first of all, they're trying to get it back to school. They've got it on a pram, on an ironing board. And it runs away from them. Yeah. They're in the park. What park was that, by the way? Can you remember? Was it Sefton Park or Calderstones? I imagine it might have been Calderstones, just for
I think we did quite a bit of filming in Cold of Swords.
Right.
It does sound familiar, does that? Yeah.
And it, you know, we get away and it hits these lads on a bench, these Scally lads. And the next scene we see, the fridge is in the middle of a lake, and Alex and Bryn sat on top of it, talking about, you know, what's happening. And Alex is telling Bryn why he was treating Bryn the way he was. And he said, you know, he said, because if you don't do it, I'll hurt you, but not as bad as Max and Mui will hurt me. But they managed to get the fridge back to school, and it results in one of the greatest goals ever scored in a football match on Grange Hill. I don't know if you remember that.
I remember it being in the pond.
The fridge gets away from them, and as Togger has crossed the ball in the footy match, and the fridge gets away from them, it hits the floor, it springs up, the ball hits the fridge and catapults it back, and Donny Briscoe's there just to head the ball into the net, and the goal stands. Apparently, but then Bryn then goes and tells Miss Bassinger that he was getting bullied.
Yeah.
And when he gets called to the office, his dad's there as well. And his dad, and this is the bit where his dad says to him, you know, I've thought many things of you before.
Yeah.
But I've never been ashamed of you. Until now,
I remember that scene was by the lockers, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it was. And
again,
Nigel Betts, again, another tremendous
actor. A few years later, I seen him in Emmerdale and everything, and I'm like, there's my dad.
And Alex's dad is that bad. He said to him, you know, make your own way home. And then as he's on his own, Mui comes over again, and but he wants the microwave from him when he got back.
Yeah, he does.
And Ed and Tigger find out what's up. They find out he's been excluded, and they chase after him. And he couldn't tell them. He said he still couldn't tell them, and he'd be hurt even more if he did. And there was nothing he could do. He had no way out. And Tigger and Ed realise that he's getting bullied by the Humphreys brothers. And this then led to, I think, one of the greatest fights Grange will ever, because it was all over the place and there was that many people involved, you know.
Yeah.
Togger's mates, Tigger's mates, and the Humphreys and their mates. And it's a proper Grange Hill fight, but it's one of the best because of how many people were involved and where they were. But I like the fact that the last scene of the fight, Alex is involved in it with Togger and Donny going against the Humphreys brothers. But what I like about it is the three of them all look at each other and they all smile, and then they start on the Humphreys brothers. Was there much choreography going on involved?
You know what? With stuff like that, they were very, very well organized. So with things like fight scenes and anything that involved, you know, collisions or anything like that.
Yeah.
We had stunt coordinators in.
Right.
So we did stuff with stunt coordinators a few days before. We planned the scene out. We rehearsed the scene just so that everything went proper well. And then come to film the scene, the stunt coordinators were there still as well. So they were guiding us through everything, and everything were like all health and safety and everything, precautions were taken, the job lot. So scenes like that, I guess the reason why it works so well is because, you know, we all had a good bond. We all had, you know, we're all young. We spend 6 to 8 months out of the year just with each other more or less every day. We're doing something exciting. You know, we had a very good bond and we used to do stuff out of work and everything like that. When you're there doing fight scenes, although the BBC are a bit withdrawn with the violence, so to speak, we were throwing ourselves into it.
Yeah.
So when they pulled out cross mats and stuff and everything out, we were chucking each other everywhere, you know, as kids do.
Yeah.
So the fight scenes with regards to stuff like that, they were very well choreographed. Yeah. Very well choreographed.
Brilliant. Because I just love it, the fact that, you know, obviously Alex's dad has his issues with both the Humphreys brothers. Togger had had issues with Mui and Donny had had issues with Max. And I love the fact that it's them three lads. But Alex still wouldn't, when they got collared by, I think it was Miss Gale, Alex still wouldn't tell what had happened. He wouldn't tell anyone what had happened. And Togger said that those three had started the fight. and the Humphreys brothers went, and then Togger then says, right now, they've gone, you tell her what's really been going on. And Alex just tell him everything that's happened, and the lads basically got kicked out, the Humphreys brothers. But Ed and Tigger found out that Alex had nicked Ed's camera give to the Humphreys brothers, and obviously Tigger had to go. Even though he knew what had been going on, he still had to go, and Alison was like, look, I know why you nicked it. They know why you nicked it, and they will come round. And there's a scene where on the last day, Max and Mui are outside the school, and they start having a go at Alex, because then obviously they're not allowed in.
Yeah.
But they said, you know, he hasn't got away with it. But I like the fact that Ed and Tigger still stood with Alex, even though they weren't speaking to him.
Yeah.
And that showed, you know, the fact that, yeah, because Alison... Alex turns around to say, definitely. Alex turns around to say thanks to them, but they've walked off. And in the end, Tigger and Ed forgave Alex and told him that they were still mates.
Yeah.
Which then comes on to not just your last series of Grange Hill.
I know.
But the last series. Now, when I'm putting an episode of the podcast out, I do like a guest-to-guest competition, and I put picture clues out as to who the guest's going to be. And whoever's first to guess gets to give me a question to ask. Now, the person that's asked this question is a lad called Wayne Rogers. Now, Wayne is a massive Grange Hill fan, and he runs one of the biggest Grange Hill groups on Facebook called Grange Hill Fans.
Oh, well, tell him to have me.
Yeah, definitely. And Wayne has asked, when Series 31 started...
Yeah.
Were you aware that this was going to be it?
No.
Right. Okay. So when did you find out?
So speculation started, I'd probably say halfway through filming.
Right.
That's when it started coming to us. Whether the people above us knew or not, I don't know. Yeah. But I mean, it was a case of every year it just got recommissioned.
Right.
You know, so
it was automatic, wasn't it? Yeah, it was an automatic thing.
It's become the norm that, you know, you start getting your scripts through and you think, you know, and you hear, oh, well, we've been recommissioned, so, you know, you're coming back and all this stuff. And obviously, with the way the storylines were heading, you think, well, you can't stop it now.
Yeah.
You can't stop it now. So, yeah, we didn't really hear anything until, like, halfway through the last series.
Right.
And then we all started asking questions then.
Right, okay.
And obviously, we're a bit more grown up now. So, you know, me and Alex, we both passed as tests. We were driving ourselves. Yeah. You know, we're sort of classed as adults. So, you know, we're there for long days. Because obviously, when you're younger than 16, within your license rights, you can only work so many hours a day. You can only film for so many hours. You have to have tuition, you know, you have to have scheduled breaks. Whereas when you're over 16, you don't.
Yeah.
So we spent long days working around all that.
Yeah.
And you sort of think, well, you know, it's coming again next year. Like, I can't wait for next year, you know, and you're always, you're planning stuff and everything like that. And then when you hear that, you think, well, it's actually, where do I go from here? Like, don't get me wrong. We'd all had a really good boost at the start of our careers with Grange Hill. And we'd all done stuff in between.
Yeah.
But it was like a second home.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, definitely.
Between 6 to 8 months a year, and you're with the same group of people. We kept a lot of the same, like, crew members, cameramen, first ADs, directors, the works. And you sort of get that sense of you're a family.
Yeah.
You walk into work and everybody's, oh, you're all right, I mean, and you know what's going on. And obviously you've got Hollyoaks getting filmed in the same studios. So Emma Rigby used to come and spend a lot of time with us. So you're mingling with all different kinds of people. And I suppose that you think to yourself, well, when I've done here, I'm moving to Hollyoaks.
Yeah.
And I'll just keep on moving up, you know. So when we actually found out that, so we didn't find out that it were actually ending, that was the final series when we finished filming.
Right, I get you.
But the ending were kept open.
Yeah.
Just in case.
Okay, yeah.
So, and there's a big discussion about that because obviously the way that it's been ended before when it was meant to end.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, schools burning down and stuff. And, you know, I mean, there were potentially a big explosion.
Yeah.
I think if I remember right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
there were potentially a big explosion that didn't happen.
Yeah.
But the way that they left it open, we all thought, nah, there's another year we've got. You know, we're going to be back next year.
I mean, when I've researched Alex's character and gone through it, what I've noticed about that last series, it is very different. It's very different to everything else because, you know, at that time, was it Ofcom had said that CBBC needed to cater for under-11s and under-11s only?
I think there were a big thing about Waterloo Road as well because Waterloo Road had started.
Right.
So, I mean, at the time, when I started Grangehill, it was like Grangehill, Biker Grove.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, I think Grangehill had that edge. It had been running a lot longer. It was a lot more well-established. They got deeper the storyline, so it was more relevant. And so, you know, I think I can say this. We sort of overtook Biker Grove in a way. So Biker Grove finished. And then Waterloo Road started. Now, Waterloo Road was the same programme. It was the same programme, but for... And I think that's where times really did change because people at high school...
Yeah.
Didn't want the soft stuff anymore.
Yeah.
They wanted that more reality.
Yeah.
You know, more to real life than what Grangehill was. We had big, hard-hitting storylines.
Yeah.
But Waterloo Road took that to the next, you know.
And it also took quite a few of the cast as well.
There were loads of us that have been in Waterloo Road.
But I mean, as I say, it seemed very different because the episodes all seemed to be self-contained.
Yeah.
As well.
Like bringing everybody's storylines to the episode. The other end of the scale.
Yeah, so. And sort of your storyline was, you know, it was now the Gang of Five with the three lads and Alison and Sammy as well. And it was all sort of like about relationships and growing up, but everything just seemed to be self-contained. Like the cross-country storyline where they had the protest, that was done and dusted in an episode. The bit where I love this bit, Alex started doing like growing organic veg.
Yeah, did you?
The bit where, like, you know, Alex fancied Alison, Tigger fancied Alison, and they forgot her birthday. And Alex had been trying to ask Alison out. This went on, you know, this went through this thing. Alex had been trying to ask out. Tigger had been trying to ask her out. But they forgot her birthday. But Tigger was openly talking about fancying Alison, and Ed was always putting it off, putting them off. And then when they forgot her birthday, Alex decided he'd make her a cake. But he also had, like, this is why it was different, like, dreams about him and Alison, if you remember that. Because there's a cracking one where you're in that garden, you're in the allotments, and you're dressed as, like, a country bumpkin. If you remember that. You're dressed as a country bumpkin, and in the dream sequence, Alex asks Alison out, and then he comes back around and he's just talking to Alison normally. Then there's another one later on where he's remembered that he's making the cake. He's making a birthday cake, and he has another dream sequence, which is like a bake-off type thing, or like X Factor, and Alison's like a judge and she's telling him how good the cake is. And then Alex speaks to Alison and said, "Look, will you come to my house after school? I've got a surprise for you." And he's made her a cake and he's doing a bit of a meal for her, like a romantic meal.
Yeah.
And there's a knock on the door and he opens the door and it's Sammy. Because Sammy said, "Oh, Alison said you're having a surprise birthday party for her." She's coming later. She's at the CLC, which had been introduced. And then Alison texts Alex and said she wasn't coming. And Alex tells Sammy that it was meant to be just him and her and he liked her and all that. So they went back to CLC. Tigger had been making a video birthday card
Yeah.
For it.
Yeah.
And when he was going through the video, he realized that in the background on one of the video was Ed and Allison snugging in the trees. And then there's a massive fight there, and Sammy had fancied Ed. Tegan and Alex both fancied Allison, but they got together, and it was all about that. And what I like is the fact that that all gets resolved in the fact that they all sort of value their friendship a bit too much. For that.
It was a bit like a Friends episode.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
You know, where they all have a bit of a thing for each other, but then they're like, no, you know what? It's not worth it.
Yeah.
We'll stick to being friends.
Definitely. But Tigger wouldn't forgive it. You know, at first, and he wouldn't. And in the end, they forgive each other because Ed shoves the cake in his own face. They all get back together, and they're all mates again. And then there's a bit where Alex is working in the allotments. Chloe comes and has a go. Adam's saying, you know, it was sad, pathetic, and all that. And then they find out they were going to be on telly about it. But Miss Rawlinson had heard Chloe and Angie are having a go and said that they weren't going to be on it because they wouldn't be involved in something so sad and pathetic. And the next day, the garden gets destroyed, if you remember that one.
I do.
And they all assume that it's Chloe and Andrea, and Chloe and Andrea are maintaining their innocence. And what they found out was a gas pipe burst underneath or something like that, which had ruined it. And if you then remember this bit where Alex is panicking about his exams, and Sammy comes and says to him, you need to like calm down. I can teach you to calm down.
Yeah.
And she taught him Tai Chi. Was there anything actually involved with the Tai Chi in that one, or were you just sort of making it up as you went along?
So me and Holly, bless her, played Sammy. I remember reading this episode, and it was sort of like I seen her in green room, and I went, "Do you know Tai Chi?" And she was like, "No." And I said, "So what are we doing with this?" So we had a person who actually come in the morning of when we were filming that, and she taught us that sequence.
Right.
And up until a couple of years ago, I mean, I can't remember it now, but up until a couple of years ago, I actually remembered the full sequence. It were a good little twist that, and I think that was the turning point then.
Yeah, definitely, because you know Alex does the Tai Chi, becomes fully relaxed, fully confident, and he ends up running to do the exam, and he nailed it basically. He smashed it. It was awesome. I loved the fact that there is a school trip to Liverpool in that series.
Oh, you know what? I was waiting for this to come up.
Trip to Liverpool, because I don't know at this point where Grange Hill was meant to be set. There was no ever actual set. It was just Toga says at the end, we'll be home in 2 hours. And you say, well, where are you now then?
Yeah.
So basically, Tigger had found out that his favourite rap band, Crew 82. Crew 82 were going to be performing in the cavern. There was going to be a gig. Didn't know where the gig was going to be.
But going on.
It was 2008. It was Liverpool was the capital of culture. So there was all, I mean, at the time up here, there was all kinds going on anyway.
Yeah, there was.
So, and schools were having trips into Liverpool for stuff all the time. And the lads, for some reason, were banned from the trip. I think it was because of the way they'd acted when the mayor had been.
That was the one. Something along them lines.
So they sneaked onto the coach in the toilet.
Yeah.
And then Tigger was waiting for all these messages to come through, giving them clues as to where they were performing. Unbeknownst to them, the girls had been sending Tigger's messages from their phone, telling them where they should have been. So they ended up going to the Anglican Cathedral. They ended up on a ferry across the Mersey to Birkenhead. And in the end, they realised that it was in the cavern.
Yeah, what a club.
In my younger days, the cavern was the Saturday night place to go. And When they got there, though, the bouncer wouldn't let them in, but so they told them that they were performing, that they were a rap crew as well, and they were allowed to go in. But they had no money by this point to get home. They watched Crew 82 perform. They were made up. Yeah. They had no money to get home until they realised that there was a cash prize for... competition going on that day, and there was a cash there was a cash prize. Because they were, what were they called? The Tig Easy Crew or something like that.
Something along their minds. I think we came up with that ourselves.
Okay. The Tig Easy Crew. And you did, and they did get to perform on stage in the cavern. You must have stories about that one.
Honestly, so when this episode first come about, so producers come to us and said, look, this episode... basically, you're going to be doing this competition. They explained it all. And they said, what we want is a verse from each of you.
Right.
You know, so they said, we'll give you free rein and see what you come up with. So we were all, you know, we were throwing ideas about and coming up with funny stuff and whatnot. And some of the stuff we come up with were like, no, you can't say that, but you can say this, you know, and whatnot. So we had such a good laugh with that. And then I can't remember whose idea it was, but somebody turned around and said, right, Alex and Jack, why don't you give us a verse?
Yeah.
And then because the Crew 82 have been beatboxers,
yeah,
they turned around and said, Josh, why don't you beatbox? So we turned up to a studio in Liverpool. I can't remember where it was. We turned up to a studio in Liverpool, proper recording studio. Yeah. We'd never been in all that before, so we were having a right laugh. And I think the song started something along them lines, but I had like an hour with somebody who could beatbox, and you know what can you learn in an hour? Yeah. You know, so I'm there doing this beatbox and they're rapping to it, and it was such a good like fun thing to do.
Yeah.
And then when we left, they give us it on a CD, white label and stuff. So we were going, a white label. Yeah. You know. but it was absolutely brilliant. Like, that was an experience in itself. But then, like you say, to perform at the Cavern Club.
Yeah. Yeah.
That in itself is a big thing. Like, you're standing where legends have stood. Yeah. You know, some of the most iconic people throughout the world have stood and performed on that stage. And, you know, I mean, it's a bit of a different feeling because obviously we're not doing it to a crowd like what they would be.
Yeah.
But still
there.
Yeah, that history, just honestly, you just soak it in. You just soak it in and you think, what an actual place to, like, you know, it's one of them pinch me moments.
Yeah. I mean, I let's say every Saturday we used to end up in the cavern and I loved it. And one thing I'll say about the cavern, the toilets in the cavern smell like no other toilets in the world. I remember you used to go in there and you just think, oh, I've got to go to the toilet now. And you didn't want to go because the smell was just horrendous in the toilets.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, and especially when they stopped smoking in clubs as well, because there was nothing else to mask it. It was unreal. Yeah. But yeah, I loved the cavern. But again, that was a self-contained episode. Again, it's all like...
I think we ended up getting a lift in a Hummer.
Getting a lift. So the band came and said, you know, basically, you know, you weren't very good, but you've had a go. Sort of explained what they'd been doing to get there.
Yeah, so yeah.
Gave them a lift in a Hummer, I think it was. Something
like
that.
Big
anyway.
Hummer, big Hummer, yeah.
But I have to ask you about the wrestling match. Atomic Al versus the Headmaster.
Yes, I remember. That's one of them things that just,
So that basically came about because Alex and Ed were both sort of fancying Sammy. And Ed said he was going around to Sammy's to do his homework, in inverted commas. And Alex had floored Ed. Ed got up and Tigger had to break them up.
This thing came
about them having a proper fight, proper rules and all that. Yes. Mr. McDonald obviously wouldn't let them. So they said they'd broadcast it. They'd sell tickets. They'd sell. They'd broadcast it. And but then there was a wrestling match getting shown.
Honestly,
I mean, that must have been a ball to film as well.
Like I say, it's one of them again. It's one of them things that you just at the time because it's a bit so surreal.
Yeah.
But you can have such a laugh with it. And like I say, the bond that we have, and you know, whenever you get any coordinators and all that, and you've got crash mats, you literally throw each other, you're young, you throw each other about, and you know, stuff like that were good. But not only that, but like I got to do the physical side of stuff as well. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, as a fat lad, it's your time to shine. You know what I mean? Kind of moment.
Yeah. And then it turned out that they filmed the fight. They weren't really fighting. They realised they didn't want to fight over a girl anyway. And Sammy wasn't happy with them because she thought that the fight was real as well. And she basically said, well, aren't I worth fighting over? and then she said, you've got to go and tell people because people have paid to watch a proper fight. So then they went and then they told them that it wasn't a genuine fight. And I also have to talk about another one where you dressed up when Tigger had started going out with Cecile, the French girl. Another self-contained. This would have lasted a while in the earlier series.
Yeah.
And she basically changed his appearance and all that. And Tigger had to go at all his mates because they were trying to talk him around, saying, you know, what are you doing here? Like, what has this girl got you doing? And Tigger banged his head. And he carried on, and he bumped into all his mates, and they all had different personas, and Alex had become kind of like a mobster, like a Bugsy Malone.
I've got pictures of this at home. I've got pictures of it. I've got stills of this.
He'd become like, you know, this gangster who had Anzia working for him, who, by the way, had the perfect gangster surname of O'Malley. It worked out perfect. So, I mean, that must have been a ball again.
It's one of them surreal moments where, you know, you have such a good laugh because it's so different from what you used to play. That was a brilliant episode, that.
When I seen that, I was like, that is unreal. And to make, as I say, to make you such a different character as well. So then we come to the last ever episode. Yeah. It's the prom. And Alex still hadn't asked Sammy to the prom, and it was that night he imagined asking her out.
Yeah.
He was imagining asking her out with his reflection, if you remember that. And he ends up arguing with his own reflection, if you remember that. And it's good because the reflection is saying all the things that, like, the bullies would have been saying to him. And that's quite cleverly done. What are you going to? What are you asking her out for? You know, she's going to say no and all this. And then at the prom, they went to prom anyway. They didn't go together. Alex was finding it hard to talk to Sammy. Sammy's finding it hard to talk to Alex.
Yeah.
And then someone else asked Sammy to dance.
You
can see Alex is like looking and he's thinking that should be me basically. But again, he looks at his reflection and his reflection shakes his head like, that's not gonna work. But in the end, he does. He walks over, he interrupts the dance. He's trying to tell Sammy how he feels.
Yeah.
And then one of the year sevens runs in, stopping the prom and saying that there's an unexploded bomb under the school. And then it turns out that there was a bomb, but it was never going to go off. But the prom was over.
Yeah.
And Alex went looking for Sammy and he found her on the dance floor on her own.
Yeah.
And he asks her to dance with him. There was no music. And Alex said he could hear music in his head, basically.
Oh, dear. I remember that line.
And then they do dance and then they kissed. Now, was that difficult to film?
Yeah, and I actually have a very good story about this.
Right, go ahead, go for it, let's go.
So, when the script came out, obviously we were all like, you know, last script of the series, we didn't know it was the last one ever, but it could possibly be.
Yeah.
And Holly's dad, Alan, he was a very well, he put him, he, he how can I explain it? He addressed himself very well.
Right.
He was very well dressed.
Yeah.
And he had great posture. He was like James Bond. We used to call him James Bond.
Okay.
He was very like James Bond, and he spoke, he was so soft, but he was to the point, you know what I mean? He had a way
of
talking. And we all loved him. We loved Alan to bits. And, you know, it was, for a couple of years, it were a case of, we used to wind him up and say, Alan, who's going to get to kiss Ollie first?
Right, okay.
And he thought he'd got through all that without having to worry about anything. So when the last episode come out, that was the biggest thing that I looked at, because I'd never kissed anybody on screen before.
Yeah.
And it's a lot different to a natural kiss in real life. Yeah. Because when you do that, you've got about 40 pair of eyes on you.
Right.
So, you know, it was a big thing. And then obviously, I've sort of grown up with Ollie.
Yeah.
And I didn't see it like that. So it's a bit of, you know, there's that awkwardness and stuff like that. And we were both more or less reading it at the same point.
Right.
And we come into the green room and I'm like, you all right? And she was, you know, and then she was like, yeah, I'm all right. She's like, you think we should go through this scene before? And, you know, nail. So we ended up getting to the point where we rehearsed the scene.
Yeah.
Obviously, but we always put the kiss off.
Right.
We always put it off.
Yeah.
And, you know, then you get people coming in and winding up going, you've got to eat garlic before you do that. And you know what I mean? So we're trying to have a laugh of it and make it a bit more like, so we're more comfortable, so to speak, you know, and we could have a laugh about it. But, so, when Alan read it, he walked into the green room, and it was early morning, and he walked into the green room, and he looked at me, and I just stared at him, and I went, you're all right, you're all right, Alan. he went, Josh, I think we need to have a word. So, he sat me down, and he sort of set me some ground rules.
Right, okay.
So, you know, and he was like, it's my daughter, don't forget. And I just thought, you know what, it's nice as that, but...
Yeah.
As I got up, I turned around and I went, but you do know it's scripted, so if Alex wants to do it, Alex can do it.
Yeah.
And I said to him, of all the people that you thought would have kissed Ollie out of everybody who's been in, it wouldn't have been me.
No. So what was his role then?
Oh, Alan's.
Yeah.
So because Ollie was from London.
Right.
So, and she was under 16.
Right.
She ended up being 16. He ended up staying with us because she were traveling to and from.
Ah, England. Right, okay.
So a lot of time, when you're an underage artist, as they say, under 16, you need a chaperone, and obviously because they were stopping in hotels,
you
couldn't supply chaperones that will work. So Alan stayed. So a lot of time, he used to come up and he'd be just sat around waiting.
Oh, right, okay.
You know, he'd get stuff done, or he'd come on set with us and stuff, and he proper became part of us, family, you know. I'm used to go to him for advice and everything.
Yeah,
like,
all right, okay.
He was sounds, wise, so, and then when I stood up and I did that, it was kind of like, nice one, Alan, you know. And, you know, it was just one of them moments where you just thought, I've been waiting for this.
Yeah.
For so long. Yeah. And
brilliant. Okay, so then that was the end of Grange Hill. And you've talked about how you felt and stuff like that. And you carried on acting?
Yeah, I did. I carried on acting for a while. I did quite a few good roles.
I was looking about this, because obviously you did, we mentioned Waterloo Road, where obviously you would have been reunited with people, quite a few. And, you know, you did Holby City a couple of times and Doctor's Book.
I think, if I remember correctly,
yeah,
I did Holby City twice within the same year as two different characters.
Well, So I've got Conrad Day and Frankie Moore.
As
the two different characters.
Yeah.
But I need to talk to you about Becoming Human. Now, I'm going to be honest. Becoming Human is one of them things that sort of passed me by. But you were like the main, you know, you were the main character.
Yeah. The storyline was about me, basically. But obviously, you had other characters in there that, you know, we were all main characters, but
yeah,
it were about.
Did you play a ghost? Is that right?
I did, yeah.
Right, okay, yeah. I mean, when like you look at it, I don't like using the phrase cashing in, but at that time, you had things like Twilight and stuff like that. So there was a vampire in there and
a werewolf,
and a ghost. Like, and as I say, from what I remember, as I say, it sort of passed me by, but I remember it being on. It was just the one series.
Yeah, so Becoming Human was sort of a sister program to Being Human.
Right.
So okay. At first, it started off as an internet series.
Right.
And it was just a little project. So every year at the time, the BBC gave funding to a couple of little projects to see what would work and, you know, yeah. just a trial and error kind of thing.
Yeah.
And somebody come up with it. And when I actually went for the audition, I'd never really watched Being Human, but I'd seen things about it.
Yeah.
Because it was big at the time on BBC Three. And I actually turned up to my audition. I turned up early. Right. And I said, you know, I've travelled from Leeds and, you know, all the way down to London. I said, and I paid £9 something an hour for parking. So I went in and I asked for some script work as well because my printer broke the night before.
Okay.
So I said, can I come in and audition early? And can I grab some script work? They went, well, we're just about to have his dinner, but take this, come back in half an hour, we'll see you, and you can get back off because I explained my situation with parking. So I've been reading through the script work. I'd already read through the script. So I've been going through it. And I walked into the audition after they had the dinner. And I can't remember Phil's last name, but he was a big producer for BBC. And I've sat down. There's like a panel of five people. And so they started talking to me and asking me questions. And they said, so have you seen Being Human? And that was one of them moments where you think, do I tell them truth or do I make out? But then if I make out, they're going to ask me about it.
Yeah.
So I just turned around and said, I've got to be honest. No, I haven't. I said, but I know what it's about. I know the gist of it. And I did my audition. And normally when you do your audition, you get constructive criticism and whatnot, and you do a couple of takes. So I did my audition piece and everybody just sat there and looked at me and I thought, right, okay. So I just sat there waiting for some sort of direction or some comments. And they turned on and said, after a couple of minutes of them just like sitting there and listening, I didn't know at the time, but I'll explain why in a minute. So
it's okay.
They just sat there staring at me and I thought, well, have I done something wrong? So then they went, well, will you do it next scene? But there'd been a proper dramatic, awkward pause. And I did the second scene. And Phil turned around and went, will you just go me outside a minute? So I thought, all right, not a problem. So I've gone outside. And then they've brought me back in. And they've said, we want to sort of explain why we were just sat there, not talking before. And I went, okay. And they said, so the scene that you've just done isn't how that scene's intended at all.
Right.
And I went, well, that's the way I saw it. So obviously that's the way I portrayed it. So I started explaining myself of why I've done it that way. And Phil went, no, just stop a minute. So I stopped talking. And I'm bad with names, I'm good with faces.
Right.
But one of the writers were there and she went, I wrote that. She said, I wrote the whole thing. And she went, that bit that you've just done is a big iconic moment. Like, it's a big moment throughout the whole thing. And she said, I wrote that and I intended it this way. And I said, oh, sorry. I said, I didn't get it. I said, I can do it like that. And she went, no, sure, I don't want you to. She went, we all sat there because we've all read through the script and we know what's going on.
Yeah.
She said, we all sat there thinking, why didn't we see that? So I thought, well, that's good.
Yeah.
How do you take that? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then we would discuss, we were having a discussion and I went in there for like another 20 minutes and I walked out and Phil walked me out and he just turned around and he went, Josh, thank you so much for coming. He said, honestly, he went, and listen, he said, I'll be in touch very soon.
Wow.
So I thought, well, that's a good sign.
Yeah.
And then about 20 minutes later into my car journey up home, I got a phone call off a number that I don't know.
Yeah.
I've answered it and I've said hello and he said, Josh, it's Phil. I'm like, all right. He went, I've spoke to your agent. He said, but I wanted to tell you personally.
Yeah.
That you're brilliant. He said, the way you did that, he said, amazing. He said, and we'd like to give you the part. And you know what? I was chuffed to bits because it just showed how a different set of eyes, a different perspective.
Yeah.
And changed something. Do you know what I mean? And it was a big moment for me because I thought, I've done something there.
Yeah.
You know, and it could have swayed. It could have gone either way.
Yeah.
But it pulled off.
Yeah.
And they absolutely appreciate. They loved it. And I had such a good experience.
Yeah.
That, like, being a ghost, it goes against everything that you taught.
Yeah.
So Craig and Layla, they couldn't talk to me in certain scenes because I were a ghost.
Right, yeah.
You know, and I couldn't look at them in certain, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we had all the scenes where the cupboards were opening and everything was flying all over. And just watching how all that was filmed, I've never seen it like it in my life.
Yeah.
So it was just, that whole experience of that, it was, I think I did three or four weeks filming in Cardiff. Well, Barry Allen, to be fair.
Right.
But it was amazing.
Yeah.
And I thought they pulled it off so well. But this brings me back to not realising who you're working with.
Right, okay.
So Emma Rigby played a guest appearance in it.
Yeah.
And I know Emma from Grangeville and Hollyoaks. Yeah. So we had that connection. And we hadn't seen each other for years, so it was good with that.
Yeah.
And obviously you've got Craig, who had been in Tracy Beaker. He was just starting and just getting his foot in LA. He'd done Yellow Submarine, which is a British film that Ben Stiller produced.
Right.
But watch it. It's absolute comedy gold.
Right.
Comedy gold. So he was getting his foot into America. He was having meetings with big agencies over there. He'd been to parties with Drake and stuff. Do you know what I mean?
So yeah.
It was a big thing. And then you've got John Boyega.
Wow.
Who just filmed the Tap the Block. He just filmed the Tap the Block. You know what? And he was such a good man. He was a Christian man. You know, he knew what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
And he was so persistent and focused, you know, and now look at him.
Yeah.
Brilliant. What platform he's on.
Brilliant,
you know,
yeah.
That I look back at that now and I think, you know what? I've shared TV and stage with some amazing faces and it's something at the time that you don't realise and you sort of take it for granted.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And oh, there was one more thing I wanted to speak to you about, which was called the knife that killed me.
Yeah.
And obviously, Jack McMullen.
What a guy. Listen,
that must have been great working with him again.
You know what? And I mean, look at him now. Yeah. Le Mans, you know, he's absolutely smashing it as Jack. And you know what? They all deserve it. They all do deserve it. They've done so well. But it was good because we knew some other people in it. And obviously working with Jack and playing Jack's best mate.
Yeah.
We already had that chemistry.
Yeah.
And it was brilliant because it was the first ever full green screen CGI film to ever be made. It got compared to Sin City.
Wow.
Because of the CGI, but we used more CGI than Sin City.
Wow.
So, and I think when it came out, it made one of the top 10 films.
Wow.
So, you know, you've got to think, me and Jack have known each other since being 13, 14. And then we're coming to do this film for Universal Pictures.
Yeah.
you know, full green screen, were main characters, were sort of similar roles, you know, yeah. And it was just like, it was so good to be filming again.
Brilliant.
And then everybody else we met, you know, it were amazing. And, you know, it's always a pleasure to work with people that you've worked with.
Yeah.
Then, you know, a lot of people used to compare me to Gadget out of This Is England, which
right, yeah.
Which is another good friend of mine, Andy Ellis.
Yeah.
That's where I met him.
Right.
So it was, The Knife That Killed Me was so good because a lot of the people that I worked with there, I still talk to today. I'm still in touch a lot with one of the directors, Marcus Roma. He's a brilliant man. His direction is next to none. Like,
yeah.
You know, I still talk to some of the actors in that. So,
yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, it's good.
Brilliant. And can I ask then, are you still in touch with any of the Grange Hill cast?
I am, yeah. So, funnily enough, me and Alex are very good friends.
Right.
Me and Alex have always remained good friends. His mum was best mates with my mum.
All right, okay.
And, you know, it's one of them where you talk every so often and whatnot. And, you know, you just keep in touch with people, like, oh, what are you being up to? It's good to have a catch up, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
We always sort of kept in touch. And then last year, my mum got ill.
Right.
She beat cancer the year before, and then last year she got cancer, and that's what, you know, unfortunately she died last year.
Oh, right, okay.
In May, but what were nice about it, so Alex used to come on holiday with us as a family.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to go stop at his, you know, we were always at each other's houses and stuff and whatnot. And, you know, it was nice because although we keep in touch, stuff like that, you know, I used to ring him and tell him more or less straight away.
Yeah.
He had a very good relationship with my mum. So did all his family. It was like an extension of our family to him there.
Yeah.
And we saw each other a couple of times last year. Like, you know, the situation was hard, but it was like I saw him yesterday.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, we comforted each other. And me and Alex, we're them type of people where even at the worst of times, we're bad to be around because we'll make a joke out of something.
Yeah.
Just because it's not like a defense mechanism. So they're not everybody's doom and gloom. We try and when we're together, we're bad.
Yeah. You always need someone like that in the group, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we just, you know, we vibe off each other, and you know, and that's what it was like filming with him. You've always got to have that good vibe so you can throw back at each other and bounce off each other and stuff.
Yeah.
So Alex, I do have a very good relationship with Alex still. I speak to quite a lot of them, not so much very regular, but I do speak to quite a bit of them. I mean, I speak to Jack quite a bit. I've always got an interest in what he's doing, you know. He's always doing something. Yeah. He's always got something in the pipeline.
Brilliant.
So it's good. And I still keep in touch with Georgia as well. Spoke to Georgia quite a bit, you know. So I do speak to.
And you'll have to put a word in for me with all them.
It'd be nice for them all to just, you know, have a bit of a flashback because
because your face has been great on some of them things I mentioned today. So your IMDb sort of stops then after The Knife That Killed Me.
Yeah.
So what are you doing now then?
So, I mean, my theatre tour won't be on that, but I did a theatre tour in 2015.
Okay.
I did an episode of Sam and Mark in 2016. And, you know, it got to that age where I was too young to do some stuff.
Yeah.
I was too old to do other stuff.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's one of them where you need real life experience as well.
Yeah.
And as anybody in the acting industry will tell you, it's an hard industry to be on. You're always waiting on the end of a phone. Yeah. So then real life kicks in and, you know, you're at that age where you're moving out and, you know, you've got bills to pay and stuff like that. So, I mean, I've always been a grafter. I've always had a normal job. I've always been doing something. And I don't mind putting the graft in. So from, I'd probably say 2017 up until now, I've had various different jobs. I've done industrial concrete floor laying for my brother. So, you know, I've laid massive factory floors and 18, 20 hour shifts and stuff, you know. Wow. I did pet transport, so I transported pets all over Europe, which is a bit of a niche market.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of them where I got to experience Europe, and yeah, I was traveling all about, and, you know, I've had my own drama school,
right,
which I had for 2 years, and unfortunately I had to shut because I went on tour and I couldn't,
uh-huh,
I couldn't get teachers and stuff and all that kind of thing. And at the minute, I've been, so every Christmas,
yeah,
I'm not, I think you can guess what I'm now. So I think it was 2000 and it might have been 2017.
Yeah.
And I was sat there and I thought, I'd done grottos before.
Yeah.
Like I'd done it before. And I used to do it for family and friends and stuff, you know, just like close family and friends. They had a Santa suit. I thought, you know, yeah, I'll help kids out on that. And I wasn't working. It was December and it was about 18th of December. And I thought, let's put some feelers out, see what's what. So yeah, I actually put a post up saying that I'd do home visits as Santa.
All right. Okay.
With a price list, what the visit entailed and stuff. And I had a bit of a strategy for it. So when I turned up to their house to visit them as Santa, I'd know the names, their ages,
yeah,
and something big that had happened that year.
Right.
I could tell them about. And I put the post on, it was about 10 o'clock at night, and I woke up the next morning and it had absolutely gone off.
Wow.
I got so many like messages, like I didn't manage to get to see everybody. So from that, I then generated a business doing Santa's at Christmas, which has just built and built and built every year. I did say this year I'm gonna have a year off.
Right.
I'm gonna actually enjoy Christmas this year.
Right, okay.
You know, and then I've been doing like little projects myself and stuff. And I did work for my brother for a good few years. Uh-huh. And like I say, you know, I got good at it. Like I can lay concrete to a very good professional level. Like, you know, I'm not one of them where I want an actor once and I'm not gonna graft, you know, I don't mind putting the graft in. But I've recently just, so in between all that, I'm pretty good at window cleaning.
Right, okay.
Obviously I'm not up and down a ladder. Can you imagine me up and down a ladder? So we use pole systems. And right, I'm pretty sure you know what a pole system is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So at the minute, I've just decided after New Year that I'm going to take the plunge with my mate. And we've set up, well, we've got some established work already.
Yeah.
But we're setting up our own window business. And we've actually, his first day was today. And, you know, we've got in, you know, a couple of jobs. And we've actually got in like a £250 job as well. So we're not doing too bad at the minute. But I am running a couple of other projects as well. So I do a bonkers bingo.
All right.
It's a bit like Bongo's bingo.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd say mine's better, just not as big. So yeah, I do that. That started off as just a little charity event between me and a mate of mine.
Right.
And we did it for one night and he just absolutely loved it. So I've got that as well. So I do that nearly, you know, every other weekend. Yeah. And I've just done an event in November,
mm-hmm,
which we used to have a nightclub in our town, and obviously it shut down a few years ago, but with times like they are now,
yeah,
you know, more places and more places are just shutting down. So I had a bit of a reunion there, and I held a reunion for this club, and it sold out in less than 24 hours.
Wow.
320 tickets we sold.
Wow.
So that went off really well. So from that, we've planned events for this year now. So I've got a couple of little events building up to that one. And in August, I'm throwing a very big courtyard party, which should accommodate for, if we've got as things right, about 700-800 people.
Wow.
And we've got some big names coming. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that. I've also set up a little entertainment business, so all this can be under one roof, which is Fat Boy Entertainments, believe it or not. It's spelt with a PH.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I just thought it's relevant. It's me, you know.
Yeah.
So, I've got that set up and I'm just actually in the process of trying to launch my own podcast.
Right. Okay.
I've done a lot of work with people who suffer from mental illness and addictions and stuff like that. And I know it's the in thing at the minute, but the reason why I want to do it is because I feel like people round here will listen to it because it's relevant, and I'm going to have people from round here actually on it. So it's not like you're watching it and it's somebody famous who's talking about something different where they live in a different place.
Yeah.
They can actually resonate with what's going on around here because it's going to be from people around here.
Yeah.
I have some very, very good guests lined up for it. Yes. And I can't wait to launch it. We should do a podcast about that as well.
Yeah,
we'll get you on.
Yeah,
we'll
get definitely. You on. Yeah, I'm up for that, mate. Not a problem.
Yeah, we'll get you on. And we'll ask you how, you know,
yeah,
you started off with your podcast and, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
That's, I've got a name for that as well. It's called Listen Here.
Right.
I think it's a very Yorkshire saying. And it's just straight to point, listen here.
Yeah.
So, I'm on with that. And that's me at the minute. But I have got, I am getting back into acting this year.
Oh, brilliant.
I do believe that I've spent long enough out.
Yeah.
I've got some more life experience. Believe it or not, I did go bald.
Right.
And I've got an air system. So I've got a bit of a different look now. And I just think it's time for me to come back with what I've experienced and what I've learned and put it into something. So I'm actually starting a project at the back end of February. It's called Dicks.
Right.
But it's D-I-C-S.
Right.
It's a comedy. Very slapstick.
Yeah.
It's been very well written by a very good friend of mine called James Varley. Uh-huh. He has his own production company. And I can't wait to start it because the character that I play in that is something I've never done before.
Nice.
And we've been having such a good play about with ideas for how we can pull stuff off and that. But I start filming that at the back end of February. And we've got, I'd like to say we've got two major channels.
Right.
That are very, very interested.
Cool.
So I'm hoping that once I shake a bit of TV rust off, a bit of screen rust, that this year I'm going to get back into it. I've got new headshots that I'm getting done. And I've been back in touch with my agent and they're more than happy for me to be back
brilliant.
On board.
Oh, brilliant. Well, so best of
I'm
luck with that.
This year is my launch back into TV because I do miss it.
Okay. Well, Josh, I nearly called you Alex then.
It happens.
Josh, right, we are coming towards the end of the interview. Now, I've just got a few more questions. They're the same questions I ask at the end, and they're all Grangehill related. So recently, there's been talk of a Grangehill movie in the works. Phil Redmond has written it. Kellen Jones is involved as well, who was a teacher up there in the Liverpool years. What do you think of the idea of a Grangehill movie?
I think personally, it's a good idea.
Yeah.
I think because the older generation, now you got to think, Grangehill were going for 30 years. So it's touched three decades of people.
Yeah.
And how many generations has it touched? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think purely, just for the nostalgia alone, it'd be a hit.
Yeah.
Because it'd be one of them films where parents would turn around and say, watch this with me because this is what we used to watch when we were kids.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that, you know, there'd be a lot of positive stuff to come from it, you know. If they could bring it back on an anniversary, I don't know if there's any specific anniversary involved, but I think it'd be good to see. And if Phil Redmond does listen to this, I'd love to be a part of it as well.
I was going to ask you, would we see a return of Alex Pickering if you were asked? Yeah.
Honestly, I'd love to. I'd love to, because it'd be good to see how he was to how he is now.
Yeah. Brilliant. And okay.
Would he still be with Sammy? Who knows?
Yeah.
Have they had kids? Who knows?
Brilliant. And then, okay, so then, other than Alex Pickering, who was your favourite character in Grange Hill? And it can be any era as well, by the way. It doesn't need to be.
From who was my favourite character?
Who was your favourite character other than Alex, yeah?
Abel.
Right, yeah. Brilliant.
Lucas Lindo.
Yeah.
Honestly, I mean, what a guy he is. What a guy he is. And I still speak to Lucas. Sorry, I didn't even mention him.
Yeah.
But his character was just so, like, placid.
Yeah.
And just chilled out. He never really got into the mix, but he would always...
Yeah, he was always around and about, yeah.
But he had this persona about him, because he had this little tie like this.
Yeah.
I remember he had a little tie, and I just think, you know, he was such a... He would always hit miss, but he would also, like, good at football and good at sports. So he had the complete opposite life to Alex.
Yeah.
It was like Alex, but the alter ego.
Yeah.
So Alex would never quite be Togger.
Yeah.
He wouldn't be that popular, good-looking, tanned, always had his hair done sort of pupil.
Yeah.
He would have been Abel.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I liked Abel, but I've got to say as well, Ed, Mr. Maliki.
Right, okay.
Because the way he played him, yeah. And I mean, Ed off camera, hilarious.
Yeah. you know what? You can tell that. You can tell that from seeing him there.
So funny. And, but you saw bits of Ed in Mr. Maliki.
Yeah.
So sometimes we'd laugh because we'd be like, is this Ed or?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So he was a good character as well. I enjoyed it.
And if you couldn't have played Alex, which other character would you like to have played then? Would it have been one of them?
I'd probably say I'd have a good go at being Roland.
Right, okay.
I'd like to have had a good go at being Roland.
Brilliant. Okay. And so then the final question, Josh, is why do you think there is still such affection for Grange Hill?
Because I think it was way ahead of its time.
Right.
And I think that, like I said earlier, the way that it was wrote, the way that stories were portrayed and the way that they come across screen, it were always relevant.
Yeah.
You could always relate to it. And up until Waterloo Road, there'd never been nothing like it.
No.
And that's a comment that I get quite a lot. So when people find out that I have been in Grange Hill, the older generation will turn around and say, well, you weren't in it when I watched it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But everybody has watched it at some point.
Yeah.
You know, and I just think it was such a big thing because of the time it were on TV, when you got in from work, from school.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I think it become a proper household name and brand. And everybody knows the intro music.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't not. It's iconic. No. I've heard it in songs and stuff before, and I thought, you know.
Brilliant. So
I just think it was brilliantly wrote. And I think the fact that it spanned for 30 years.
Yeah.
Like no other children's TV program is doing that.
No.
And I just think there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
It kept on going.
Yeah.
Now, whether there should be a remake or not, there should be more of them.
Yeah. Brilliant. Well, honestly, Josh, thank you so much for coming on. This has been an absolute epic. This episode, I mean, this is the longest one we've ever done.
I can talk around houses.
I said to you before we started, I said, considering, like, you know, you're only in it for four series, 66 episodes out of 80. Do you know what I mean? That's a hell of an amount there. And once again, thanks so much for coming on and talking, sharing your experiences, not just with Grange Hill, but with the industry as a whole as well. It's been brilliant talking to you. Like I say, I nearly called you Alex before. I told you the other day, that email I sent, I actually wrote "Hi Alex" at the start, and then and then realised that I wasn't actually sending it to Alex Pickering. I was sending it to you. But no, it's been brilliant talking to you. So thank you so much.
Every minute of it.
Thank you so much for coming on. It's been great. It really, really has. And to anyone that's listening, I'll speak to you next time. Cheers. Thanks. Bye bye.
See you later.